Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. For Indivisible on Oregon's North Coast, March is a month of protest. To find out what that means, we're talking with INCO representatives Bruce Williams and Teresa Patterson.
We have about four events planned for March. One of them is a vigil that will be on March 14th at the Garden of Surging Waves at 11 o'clock, and that is to acknowledge what is happening to people who have been kidnapped, arrested, and put into camps, particularly focusing on the children. We'll have candles. People will read letters that these young people have written, and we will have pictures, and it's a way to bring to focus that children should not be in jail. Mm-hmm. And they have been swooped up with everything else and placed in these camps. And then the second thing we're doing, we're having a community meeting. And the community meeting is on the 21st at Grace Episcopal Church. It is a time where we're going to have an open mic, some music, and we will be making signs for the No Kings 3 protest the following Saturday. And we'll have the material, the supplies for the No Kings 3. We'll have some boards and markers to create, and place for kids to create their own signs or participate in a way they want to. And the door will open at 10:30 at Grace, and officially will start at 11. And then on the 25th, Bruce can tell you more about it, but he has put together an event called Signs of Fascism. And there's about 20 of us who hold up signs of different aspects of what it means to have fascism in your country. And then the fourth thing we have is the No Kings. Now, there's a No Kings protest that will be in Seaside, and the one in Seaside starts at 11:30. It's on the sidewalk in front of the Seaside Outlet Mall. And then ours will start at noon, and we're kind of focused at Portal Park, which is right across from Safeway. But we will go east and west from there. The last time we were at Portal Park, we got all the way to where you turn up to go to the Goonie House. I think that's about 36th, and we were as far away as 16th. So when you're at Safeway, you're about halfway in between. And we'll have tables there. We'll have cards there. We'll have flags there. We have whistles. I guess that one of the things Seaside is going to do is get some cowbells. I think we'll have some bubbles there. We have brought bubbles for people, because part of the protesting is also to have joy. And it's not easy having joy right now.
We'll get more into the events and the details on them in a sec, but I wanted to ask you, when you say we are doing this, who is we? This is Indivisible.
It is Indivisible. There's a core group of leaders. There's about eight of us, and we have met, and then we have different groups, and one group is focusing on the vigil. One group is focusing on the actual No Kings 3 protest. And we have a small steering committee that focuses on our community meetings. We do have last community meeting we had, which was last Saturday, the 21st. We had about 50 people there. We have a mailing list of over 1,000, almost 1,100. But not everybody can come to the meetings. But there are a lot of people out there listening, and we often work with another group, North Coast Action, and they have their own particular audience that they work with. And so we're reaching quite a few people, but there's a core team of us, about eight of us, and then there's a secondary team of working people, about 19 or 20.
Indivisible, in general, is an organization that is primarily to promote our democracy, to save our democracy. It was first started back in 2017, shortly after Donald Trump first got elected. And Since that time, it has been growing. You know, at first, boy, I came to the first Indivisible meeting here in Astoria shortly after the election in 2016. There must have been a thousand, it felt like a thousand people. It was just overflowing with people, and that people were that concerned. And we learned that that was a well-born concern. Then when he wasn't elected for a second term, things sort of calmed down. We all said, ah, we made it. We survived that. And then he got elected for another term. And at that point, I became very active. I looked around and said, this just can't be, because what he did the first time was awful. And everything he said that he was going to do the second time around was much worse than it was the first time. No one knew, had any clue what it was going to turn out to be, and it turns out to have been so much worse than any of us ever anticipated. And so our Indivisible groups all across the nation, there are now, how many, Teresa, I've forgotten, over 5,000, is that what I understand?
I think so, 5,000 groups, and some of them are also overseas, like in Germany. They have their own Indivisible group, and it was started by two former aides to Congress who knew how the system worked, and that's Ezra Levin and Leah Greenberg, and they're a married couple, but it has grown huge. We have they have a weekly meeting called What's the Plan, and they take questions, they do question and answer, sometimes they have guest speakers, but it's a way of staying connected with the rest of the country, with the rest of people in the world, and it's very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, Bruce talked a little bit about his motivations for being mm-hmm. involved. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved?
I woke up on November 5th or 6th, whatever day it was. I was so angry, and I thought, I need to do something with all this anger. I couldn't believe people would elect somebody who mocked people, made fun of them, was really kind of sleazy. Even, and I watched some of his things that he'd presented, and I just couldn't believe. And I know how much damage he'd done in the first go around. So I decided I could either just stay angry or I'd do something about it. And so I became involved as a teacher. I have worked with lots and lots of different students, and we need to protect young people. And I started because I was very concerned how he was going to trample, and he has continued to do that, all over the Constitution. When I was younger especially, I was very, not pro-America so much as proud to be an American. Mm-hmm. And I want to preserve our Constitution and our the rule of law. It has to apply to everybody. And we constantly, and I think about Indivisible, we are constantly, when we say the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. And we do not have that now. We have a group of people in charge who are very rich, very powerful, and the law only applies to them. But the rest of us, it does apply to us, but they have forgotten that. They have not read their Constitution. They, in fact, when you ask them about it, they don't know which amendment it is that gives us certain rights. And they should. If they're elected officials or they're in secretaries of different cabinets, they should know the law of the land. And our founding, I wouldn't say, well, it was fathers, wasn't it? Founding fathers had good idea. I always look to that idea of in the Constitution or the Declaration toward a more perfect union. And Bruce and I are of the same age, and we've seen things, and I had felt we were constantly moving towards a more perfect union. But the election of Trump has shown that some people don't care about their neighbors. There seems to be a lot of cruelty in the world.
And this is an unusual situation. You know, we've talked about this. We grew up in a time that was not easy. There were difficulties. There was McCarthyism. You know, I was born into the McCarthy era, grew up in the civil rights era. Vietnam was happening as I was a teenager. Then we had, the incredible difficulties of Nixon and on. But like Teresa said, there was always hope. Our country felt like a place where we could always rise above that and figure out another way around it. But this time it feels different. This time it feels like he's following a model that has been set out there by Russia with Putin and Orban and Hungary and others around the world, that where they just take away the rights of people and don't make it easy for them to come back. So we're trying to work against that, to fight to save our democracy.
Do you feel like you, either or both of you, have been an activist before this, or is this activism something fairly new for you?
Well, for me, I was an anti-war protester and activist in the 60s and the 70s. Since then, though, not at all.
This is brand new for me. First go around, my husband was far more active, but I was teaching full time. I was, and he was working part time, and so I focused on, my students and what I was doing and in the background. But we participated in the early protests and marches in, I think it was the first women's march. I don't remember if it was 2018 or. Yeah, I think so.
2017.
Was that early. And it was like, this is something I've never done before, so it's new. But, and my daughter, she had a colleague who, when we were first demonstrating, she lives in Seattle, but the colleague of hers looked out and he goes, "Man, look at all those gray heads." Well, yeah, because we have the time and we remember that if you protest, it has an impact. But you have to be many and you have to be loud. So a lot of the people out there protesting are older, but it's because we're retired. We have the time. We have a memory. And when I was thinking about it, and a lot of people don't know, within 5 years, in the 60s, we had four major assassinations between Kennedy and Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., and then Bobby Kennedy Sr.
Sure.
And that was every day. That was so shocking. And but it was also a violent time. And now the protests are deliberately peaceful. That is the one thing we have been trained on. Do not engage. Stay peaceful. Stay calm. Don't because to get angry and use angry words is only going to irritate people and increase their belief that we're wrong. You guys are awful. And when we do protest, we don't get a lot of negative. Some people might give us the finger or thumbs down. Every once in a while, you get someone whose language is awful, and that can, it hits me to the core. I can handle the thumbs down and the finger, but we get a lot of waves. We get a lot of we even have people saying thank you, mm-hmm. people honking, waving, thumbs up, peace signs, and from all kinds of people. And you would think, someone in a big pickup truck, they're not going to like us. You'd be surprised at the number of people in big pickup trucks that wave or honk or say, that are friendly, because it's impacting everybody. And you don't know who feels the way we do.
When you decided to become involved, how did you go about that? Did you find INCO? Did INCO find you? Did you shop around? Do you remember how that happened?
Well, for me, I talked to Lydia Sorensen, who owns a quilt shop, and she goes, I know the person you need to talk to. Mm-hmm. And she introduced me at a quilt meeting to Lori Kaplan, who had started INCO in 2017 and had kept it going all this time. And then pretty soon there were more people and more people. And maybe it's because I'm an oldest child or a teacher, but I like being in charge. And so I kept saying, sure, I'll help with that. Sure, I'll do that. And it's really, the people are wonderful in the group, in the organization. Very selfless, very kind.
You mentioned getting some negative reactions
yeah.
from people, a lot of positive. Any other difficulties you've experienced along the way that have given you pause at all?
So far we live in a very easy town for this to be going on.
Right.
People are very friendly and neighborly. It's a small town that people that care about each other, and even the negative reactions we get are, you know, they're there, and they're increasingly frequent, I'm sorry to say. But still, people hold their tempers a little bit better than they probably do in other areas. So mm-hmm. we're lucky that way.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, going out and protesting? What is it that you would like to achieve with that? What would you like to happen as a result of the protesting?
I guess I can. I see it as working in several ways. One is that we are out there showing people that they're not alone if they're concerned about what's going on. We are there to let people know that we need their help, that we are trying to make a difference and to come out and let their voices be heard. The other side of it is that we want to let the federal government, Trump's minions, know that we are not sitting back and watching. We're going to take action. We're going to make a lot of noise about this. And we're succeeding tremendously with a lot of help from President Trump himself, because he keeps doing things that motivate people to come out and say, no, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, just to tag on to something Teresa talked about earlier, the start of our No Kings 3 protest, our celebration even, is a vigil for the people that are bound into these concentration camps in the United States of America. Who could possibly have thought that could ever happen? We have excellent reason to be out there, and we're working on it. We're building a nice, large group. You know, in fact, for the No Kings 1, I think our estimate was we had 1,300 people. For No Kings 2, we had about 1,700. For this one, we're hoping to get more than 2,000.
And across the nation, they had 5 million at the first No Kings, 11 million at the second No Kings. And Indivisible's not working alone. They're working with lots of other groups. They have a coalition, and they work with faith leaders, and they work with a group, 5051, which just came up this last year as a way of saying 50 states, 50 voice, or, you know, 50 capitals, one voice. And I think that's the important thing. Trump administration wants to divide us. It's constantly reminding people, or trying to remind people, what they don't have, what they don't have in common, and that finger pointing that happened so successfully in Nazi Germany, pointing to the Jews as the cause for all the problems that they were having. And people felt so bad about their own life, they were sucked into that. And Trump keeps trying to do it, but Indivisible and other groups are saying, no, we're together, we're here. You know, come when Ezra and Leah do the weekly What's the Plan, they go, and for any of you who are part of MAGA, welcome, come on in, listen to us. We're open, we're not secret, we're not private. And we have seen a number of politicians change parties. We have our own representative here who realized that his values were not compatible with the current Republican Party, and he switched over to the Democratic Party, Representative Cyrus Javidi, because he knew that his values were about families and people and the environment, and he couldn't sustain that by being a Republican. And we've talked a lot about Minnesota in our group. Mm-hmm. And Minnesotans, since the beginning of December, have been under siege by ICE and the Border Patrol. And it's not just the two murders. It's everything. But one of the positive things about Minnesota, they got 50,000 people on January 23rd out in the street in minus 20 degree weather. And people were bringing out donuts and hot chocolate. Even the National Guard was handing out donuts and hot chocolate. And they have kept it up. And ICE is not gone from Minnesota. Maybe it will be gone by the time people hear this. I don't think so. They have stayed. They're spreading out into the suburbs now. But the Minnesotans have been able to both organically and overtly organize. Some in Minnesota, some apartment buildings have their own ice watches. People, and this is really sad to me, people surround the schools to protect students and parents when they try and go into schools to keep the ice away from them. And one guy joined, he said, I had never seen children run away from our government before. And he was a young man to me. Anybody under 50 is young. So he was a young man, probably around 40. And he was crying. And he said, I can't sit back and watch this anymore. So this is how we're reaching people. There's so much with videos and news like this, like KMUN and other places that are bringing voice to what's happening and allowing us to see the truth of what's happening. It's connecting us rather than dividing us. And in my own family, I have reached out and reconnected with a niece who had voted for Trump, and she is done with him now. And it's really, and I didn't do anything. But once we connected, we reconnected, and that has been a positive thing. So I know it's possible to reunite people.
What would you like to have happen? Is your hope that if the demonstrations go large enough and enough people are participating of all ages and so on, that it will move the administration's feelings, or that it will move others to put more pressure on the administration? Or is there a way you see this turning out?
Well, you know, probably a lot of people already know this. There's are studies that have shown that if 3.5% of a population come out and actively work against the problems of an authoritarian government, and do that continuously and actively for enough time, no authoritarian government has been able to survive that kind of consistent pressure. We're so close to already having that 3.5%. I think that's about 14 million people in the United States. And if we had 12 million out at the last No Kings 2, we'll have more than that this time, and we'll probably hit that 3.5%. So what will that do? This is a different kind of a situation. We're, you know, a cornered animal is desperate. And we are sure that President Trump will do everything in his power to make voting difficult in the next election, in 26 and in 28. So we have to work on that. And I'd like to urge everyone to make sure you're registered. Check with vote.gov and don't do it just once. They're pulling some strange shenanigans to take away people's right to vote. And so check regularly. We're being nonviolent because we know this government has a penchant for violence, and we don't want to give them any excuse to invoke the Insurrection Act or, far worse, to militarize the government.
Teresa mentioned that you were particularly involved in one of the four March events. Can you tell us a little more about that one?
Oh, the signs of fascism, yeah. I saw an Instagram video of this being done somewhere else in the country, and it was very impressive. It's for those of us over maybe 60. You remember the Burma Shave signs from the old days, where you drove down the road and saw a series of signs, one after another, telling part of a story and rhyme for the Burma Shave, and then at the end with a punchline. For us, we started with a sign saying, signs of fascism. The next person 50 feet away, their sign said, having secret police, this is fascism. The next sign, controlling the media, this is fascism. And so on for 20 different evidence, clear evidence taken right out of headlines, that fascism is the goal of this administration. And we have to do something about it. The last sign in the series, it says, our grandparents fought fascism. Will you?
And that's one of four events that
yes.
Indivisible is doing in this area in March. That one is on a Wednesday, March 25th. The others are on Saturday, is that correct?
Yes.
March 14th, March 21st, and March 28th. Yeah. Is there somewhere people can go if they'd like to learn more about this?
They can always go to our website and it's INCO
Oregon.
INC Oregon. .org. Yeah. So it's INCO, but the O kind of overlaps with Oregon. And actually, you can even type in, you know, North Coast Indivisible, and that would show up for you. And our website has the information. The national website also has information about all of the protests. So I know here we have protests at all the major towns along the coast and up along Washington. And it's pretty impressive how many people are willing to come out to these different events. People I never thought would be on the street. It's really delightful. Me, I never thought I would be on the street sometimes once a week. So it's been so good to see people and of such different backgrounds.
Well, we're almost out of time, but kind of open season here. Without me asking a question, is there something else you would like people to know?
Well, just that we are trying to be very positive as much as we can. And actually, just a plug for our Indivisible group. We're trying to be more than just a protest group. We're trying to get involved in community actions and community services. And we're trying to be a helpful organization. So just part of what we're up to. So I guess that's enough. Mm-hmm.
And for me, I always want people to stay in contact with their elected officials. The pressure we have put on Democrats in the Senate and Congress have stopped the funding for DHS and the Border Patrol groups for now. And it's really important that we do need immigration reform, but we don't need the violence that comes with ICE. And calling Senator Merkley, Senator Wyden, our representative Suzanne Bonamici, you could call them every day. It's easy. I do it all the time. And the first time I ever called, I was shaking. I was so nervous. And now it's like, oh, hi, this is Teresa Patterson, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. And then I go on and tell them what I need them to do or not do. And they have been so responsive to the needs of Oregonians right now, all aspects. And for Wyden and Merkley, they have gone all around the state listening to people. What do you need? And all of us are suffering, whether we are registered Republican or Democrat or independent or working family parties, and we all need to be together. And it's going to take a while, but I do believe we will make a difference for a better world.
We've been talking with Teresa Patterson and Bruce Williams, representatives of Indivisible on Oregon's North Coast. This is The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening.